Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
Cool. I don't like standing on the platform, but I am 5'8", so hopefully you can all see me. So I wanted to start just by saying thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for giving me 30 minutes of your time. It's amazing looking out. I feel like I've met most of you. And there's loads of people here who have been kind of real encouragements and inspiration to me in my faith, so that's really nice. But there's lots of people here who haven't met me, so hello, I'm Pete. I work in an advertising agency, so I've tried to sneak in a few catchy slogans into the talk tonight. I hope that you can remember them at the end. So I've been a Christian, I became a Christian as a teenager, 11 years and 1 week to the day, which is cool. So if you know me, you know I'm kind of not really from a Christian background. My dad and his family are Jewish, and my mum and her family are kind of some Christians and some not. But on the whole, kind of most of my friends and family are kind of not that bothered by religion, not that bothered by following Jesus. But there is one thing that they do often say to me, and I wonder if you get this from people a lot. The one thing that I hear from my friends and family a lot is, it must be so nice for you. It must be so nice for you to believe in God. It must be so nice for you to be a Christian. It must be so comforting and warm and supportive and lovely. Basically, I think people see the cups of tea in church, and they see the friendly faces going through the door, and they think, well, you know, even if God doesn't exist, at least you've had quite a nice Sunday evening or quite a nice Sunday morning. And I think that even within the church, we're kind of guilty of perpetuating this a little bit. And, you know, sometimes listening to Christians, it sounds like when you become a Christian, the sky is bluer and the grass is greener and the flowers smell nicer and all of that. And I guess kind of the extreme end of that would be the prosperity gospel, some of you might heard, where people say, well, if you believe in Jesus, you might be richer or more successful or get a better job. Well, sometimes being a Christian is lovely. Sometimes it does make life easier. But actually, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the journey following Jesus can be really tough. It can be really, really difficult. In fact, the message of tonight's passage that I want to bring to you is actually a warning. It's a warning from Jesus that following him, really following him, always has a personal cost. Always has a personal cost. So that is what we're going to talk about tonight. Alex is going to come and read from us. While she's coming up, great to get her a microphone. If you want to stick your hand up, someone will bring you around a Bible. The passage is on page 990 of the Church Bible. And the passage is Luke 14:25. So just while the Bibles are going around, I'll give you a quick summary. We've been doing a series on parables, all the different parables that Jesus tells. And actually, tonight you're getting three parables for the price of one, because there's actually three different stories chunked together in the passage that Alex is going to bring to us. And I believe they're all about people who are making plans. So the first chunk is about someone's plans for their family. The second chunk is someone's plans to build a tower. And the third chunk is someone's plans to go to war. So page 990, take it away, Alex.
Okay. Large crowds were travelling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even life itself, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, Everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, "This person began to build and wasn't able to finish." Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able, with 10,000 men, to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation, while the other is still a long way off, and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples.
Cheers. Thanks, Alex. Counting the cost. Counting the cost of following Jesus. This is often given as a title of this chapter in the Bible. I think in the church Bibles, the title is "The Cost of Being a Disciple." And lots of the other parables in this series that we've looked at have been quite tricksy or complicated. But thank you, Jesus. He puts a big spoiler at the beginning of my passage. And he says it loud and clear. He says, "Unless you carry your cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple." I think after 2,000 years of art and church buildings and jewellery, we've forgotten a little bit that to this first audience of early Christians, the cross wasn't a lovely symbol. It was an execution device from their oppressors. Whoever does not carry their electric chair and follow me cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry their firing squad and follow me cannot be my disciple. It's really heavy stuff. Is Jesus saying that all Christians are going to be executed for their faith? Well, no. Although, of course, many of the first Christians were. I think what Jesus is really saying here is following him means dying to yourself whilst you're still alive. It's dying to yourself whilst you're still alive. So this is a photo of Lesha Evans. It's taken during a Black Lives Matter protest in Baton Rouge in the US. She's a 28-year-old, hardworking nurse, mother to a young son. Moved by the treatment of black people by police in America, she joined a peaceful protest that day. And as the police moved forward to clear the street, she just point blank refused to move. And in that moment, she put to death her own personal safety. She put to death her job security. She put to death her peaceful family life with her son. And she calmly waited to be arrested because of her belief in the movement. And interestingly, in an interview afterwards, she said, "In that moment, I felt like a vessel of God." Now, I believe we're called to have the same level of bravery as Lesha Evans for Jesus' movement, to carry our cross for the good news that God loves the world and has an amazing rescue plan for it in Jesus Christ. But it's a challenge. Are we willing to put to death our career ambitions for the good news? Are we willing to put to death our finances and our time? Are we willing to risk our personal safety? It's a challenge to me as much as it is to anyone else. And I think at this point, we've done it already in the service, but I think it's really worth recognising that actually here in this country, in the UK, we're Christians in unusual safety and comfort. And actually, all across the world, our Christian brothers and sisters are being asked to make these choices every single day. If you don't already know the charity Open Doors, I'd really recommend them to you. They support persecuted Christians all across the world. They've actually just released a film on YouTube called The Cost. It's really good. And there's just one story that I wanted to pull out from that, which is told by a Syrian guy. It's a true story of an older Christian woman that he knew in the city of Homs, where he lived. Now, when rebel forces took over Homs, she would have to cross a military checkpoint to go to church. And one Sunday, the soldiers just stopped her going at gunpoint for no reason and said that she couldn't go to her church. So she calmly asked to speak to whoever was in charge. He agreed to speak to her. And she said, "Please let me go to my church. And actually, more than that, please come with me and see what it's like." And I suspect out of curiosity, more than anything, he agreed to go with. And he went with her and he sat in the quiet church And in the quietness, she turned to him and said, "Don't you ever think that I'm afraid of you and your guns? I've got a great big God. He's a God of peace and reconciliation, and he wants to know you." How brave is that? And he was incredibly moved by this, and he went back to the checkpoint and told the soldiers there to always let her cross and, in fact, help her with whatever she needed. And that's kind of where the story ends. The last thing that he says is that actually the commander was moved from that checkpoint for helping her, and we don't know kind of what happens to them next. This month in northern Nigeria, Boko Haram have announced a new strategy which will be to target Christians and churches first above anyone else. In North Korea, this month, the symbol of the cross has been completely banned, and government police are ransacking homes and shops, looking for secret crosses and putting anyone who has one in prison. These are things that are happening in real life to our brothers and sisters across the world. It's the cost of following Jesus. The question this always leaves me with is why? Why, God? Why does this happen to Christians? Why do Christians have to carry their cross to be a disciple? And that's, I think, what is brought to life by the two parables, the parable of the tower builder and the parable of the warrior king. So let's go back in time, look at the context of kind of how he was telling these stories, and the context of a tower builder. Well, in these days, in these times, towers would usually sit with a vineyard. So we know this tower builder is a guy with property, with a good way of making a living for his family. And with any kind of tower, there's a little bit of status. It's going to be the tallest thing in the neighborhood. Everyone will see it. And the towers were actually watchtowers to watch over the vineyard for robbers who would come and steal your stuff, which might remind you of another parable. So really, this tower is about security, stability, protection, maintenance of your property and your income. That's what it's about. And there's the next character, the warrior king. Now, he's making plans to go to war with his neighbor king. And any kind of war in this time is deeply tied up with a fight for resources, for status, for power, for more land, more people to be your subjects. So we're told that both of these guys are prestigious, guys of status, but they're in risky positions. They're kind of walking a really fine line between success and humiliation. Now, often I think this parable is quite misunderstood. Actually, when I first read this parable, I thought the tower builder and the warrior king were supposed to be kind of like our role models. They're supposed to be kind of like the guys who really get it. And I started asking, you know, is this a parable about properly planning ahead? Which I know some people like to do. You know, is Jesus saying, if you want to follow me, you better know the cost and know that you'll be able to cope with it? Is Jesus saying, if you want to follow me, you better have a backup plan? You better have a plan B. You better have an emergency fund and a guarantor. Is this parable basically a glorified risk assessment for the teachers in the room? And is Jesus saying, if you can't cope with the cost, don't even bother giving it a go? Well, I've thought about it a lot, and I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. I actually don't think that the tower builder and the warrior king are supposed to be our role models at all. I want to suggest to you tonight that actually they're supposed to be models of kind of the folly, the stupidity, the misguidedness of trying to do things in our own strength. You see, if Jesus is saying, check what you have before you sign up, well, who here has what it takes? I don't. I don't think you do. I don't think the tower builder did. I don't think the king did. Which one of us can say that we're talented enough, rich enough, good-looking enough, successful enough to carry out God's plan without his help? Actually, we see that these guys are quite easily blinded by their own power and prosperity and status. They think they can achieve incredible things in their own strength, but they can't. They're headed for disaster. They're heading for humiliation and failure. The tower builder has pumped all his money into this huge watchtower, But he's going to count the cost of construction and soon realize that he only has enough to build the foundations. And the warrior king, he's risking the lives of all of these men over some small patch of land or petty dispute. But he'll soon realize that his army of 10,000 is not going to defeat the army of 20,000 that we're told is facing him. I don't think Jesus is saying, count the cost and make sure you can pay it. I think he's saying, count the cost if you have to. But there's no way that you can do this in your own strength, in your own talents, in your own cleverness. You don't have what it takes. One of the main themes of the whole Bible is the clever, the rich, the powerful, the mighty missing out on the good things that God has in store for them. Because when we've got our own tower building plans or war strategies, there's no room for God's plans. So instead, Jesus calls for his followers the lost, the grieving, the meek, the poor in spirit, the persecuted, the oppressed. Christianity is clearly for losers. People who don't have what it takes. People who know they can't do it. How much easier is it for God to use those people for his plans and purposes? So basically, I think Jesus is calling us to abandon our tower building, to abandon our war strategies, to abandon our foolish fight for personal security and success. And that might mean humiliation. But he's got something better for us. That's what I think he means when he says we have to carry our own cross, to die to ourselves while we're still alive. That's why I think he says at the end of the parables, any one of you who cannot give up everything you have cannot be my disciple. What I think is really amazing, though, is that God makes vulnerability and weakness the most powerful force in the whole world. A few of us went to a Christian festival this year called The Pursuit, and there we met this Iranian Dutch woman who was telling us a story about how she went to visit a church in Iran, and they were telling us kind of about what it's like to be a Christian in Iran and the kind of incredible cost people have to pay. And she said, you know, of course, our church in Holland will be praying for you for the persecution to ease. And apparently the church in Iran thought this was really funny. And they said, please don't. Please don't pray for the persecution to ease. Because for us, persecution is what it means to be a Christian. And it's what's making our church grow exponentially. On a completely different level, a few weeks ago, I had my office summer party in a nice bar in Shoreditch. And we were all having a good time. I went to the loo. I came back. My best mate at work was looking a bit sheepish, so I kind of asked her what was wrong. And she was like, oh, it's a bit awkward. But basically, a whole group of our colleagues had been laughing about me behind my back when I was away. And specifically about the issue that because I'm a Christian, I must be a virgin. Now, kind of the old me would have been absolutely mortified by this. I'm kind of a person who really cares what people think about me. But actually, in that moment, I managed to muster up some kind of self-esteem and identity in Christ. And I actually had this amazing conversation with them about what it means for me to follow Jesus and what I believe about marriage. And the fact that I didn't really care that they were laughing about me behind my back literally had them eating out of my hand. It was amazing. It's one of the greatest paradoxes of Christianity that the more we lose, the more we gain. One of my one of the most powerful stories I've ever heard is the story of two Moravian missionaries in the 18th century. This was in the time of the transatlantic slave trade, and they heard tell of a plantation owner in the Caribbean who had bought and transported thousands of captured Africans to his plantation to work as slaves. And this particular plantation owner didn't really like the church, and he said that he wouldn't have any missionaries or any churches come to his island that he owned. But these two kind of German missionaries were really determined to reach these thousands of slaves with the good news of Jesus Christ. And they knew that there was only one way that they would be able to do it. So they sold themselves into slavery on this plantation. They boarded a ship in Germany and they waved goodbye to their family at the port, knowing that they would not be coming back, that they would not see their families again. And actually, no other missionaries got to that island for another 50 years. But when they did, when the new missionaries rocked up, they found a church of 13,000 people on the island worshipping Jesus. More recently, a group of us, or me and Neil actually, and a group of other girls and guys, went to Calais, to the refugee camp there, and to do a week of volunteering, teaching English, and giving out food and stuff. And even though it wasn't a Christian organization, it was really encouraging to see loads of Christians volunteering there. And actually, kind of Neil mentioned it the other day at church, but there was this one particular guy who he'd said that when he's been growing up, he didn't have a good impression of the church or Christians at all, but he'd been doing lots of volunteering across the world with refugees in Calais, in Istanbul, in Palestine. And he said that everywhere he went on the front line, he found Christians giving up everything to help refugees. And, you know, it's kind of completely changed his perception, the witness of those Christians' lives. And we were just kind of the last piece in the puzzle, and we were able to have this amazing conversation with him and his girlfriend about what it means to be a Christian. It's one of the biggest paradoxes of Christianity, that the more you lose, the more you gain. And actually, we've talked about kind of the Christians in Calais a couple of times in this church, but the majority of the volunteers there were atheists or agnostics, people of other faiths. And what a challenge back to me that was. These are people who'd given up their jobs, they'd let go of their rental contracts. This couple we spoke about were living in a van in a car park, off credit card debt. They'd literally given up all stability and security to help refugees there. And, you know, these are people that didn't even know Jesus and what the kingdom of God is like. I was really personally kind of challenged by that. So, finally, the last thing I wanted to talk about, you might have noticed we've talked about two parables, the warrior king and the tower builder. But let's go back to the beginning, the first chunk of the story, where Jesus says, "If anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his mother and father and wife and children, he cannot be my disciple." It's a funny old passage. We know that the Bible talks a lot about loving your family and loving everyone, in fact. So this feels like a bit of a contradiction. I don't think Jesus is saying, go home and insult your wife and forget your children's birthdays. you know, I would say that this is kind of typical Eastern, you know, Middle Eastern Jewish humor. He's kind of exaggerating to make a good point, and it's a great point. And I think the point is this, that one of the hardest costs that you can pay as a disciple of Jesus is being at odds with your own family. One of the hardest things to put to death is wanting to do the best for the ones that we love the most. And sometimes our faith does call us to do this. You might have noticed that I deliberately haven't invited my family to church tonight so that I can talk about them. usually my parents don't kind of like this church that much, but every time I do something here, they do always come because they're really kind of supportive and lovely people. But yes, if you know them, please don't tell them that I'm talking about them now. So generally, my parents have been super kind of supportive of me and my faith. My dad actually said to me once, I think it's really good that you've decided to be a Christian, so long as it never interferes with your career prospects. So yes, God help me if I ever get called to be a missionary, because that's going to be a difficult conversation. One of the biggest fallouts I ever had with my parents, actually, and I'm talking kind of door slamming, table banging, tears, that kind of fallout. One of the biggest fallouts we ever had was over the Go and Grow project, which is kind of our project to move from this church building into a new church building, which is really exciting. So at the time, I was living at home, and my dad had decided to go through my bank statements. Annoying. And he'd seen that I'd given kind of some money to this project, and I'm really kind of not talking about any sizable kind of size of money here. It was a small amount. But he totally flipped. He said that I'd been brainwashed. He said that I'd been tricked, that I'd been conned. He was so angry that I thought I was going to have to move out that week. And that kind of realization that our perspectives on the world were totally different was really, 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 really difficult, actually. Really tough. And as I said, kind of my family, on the most part, really supportive and lovely. I got baptized here 3 years ago in this very spot. And my family came to support me. They sat over there. They took pictures on their phones. They kind of took the mickey the whole evening. It was great. It was really funny. But actually, kind of it dawned on me this year when some of my other friends were getting baptized here that not everyone's family was here to support them. That not everyone's family was here to kind of take pictures on their phone and take the mickey out of them. And actually, when I was writing this, I felt really called to just celebrate and respect those people in our church community who the cost that they pay for being here is being at odds with their family. And I just want to kind of recognize that there are some people here who perhaps you've come from a different faith, perhaps you've come from kind of no faith at all, but actually, it's really tough. Your parents hate you being here, your family would try and stop you being here, perhaps you can't even tell your family that you come here. This passage for you isn't theology, it's real life. And I've experienced what that's like a little bit, but kind of not as much as other people have. So, yeah, I want to celebrate and respect those people. But I also kind of want to say to us as a church that actually, for those people, we are called to be their family as well. So I want you to look to the person on your left. Look to the person on your right. That is your brother and that is your sister. We are one family. Some murmured whispers. You can't choose your family. So I just want to kind of wrap up. Then we're going to have kind of a long time of prayer and ministry for all the different things that we've talked about. So that was a parable of the tower builder and the warrior king. It's a parable about counting the cost of following Jesus, which means dying to ourselves while we're still alive. It's a couple of parables about the stupidity, the folly of trying to do stuff in our own strength, and instead giving it to God, giving up on our own kind of tower building plans and battle strategies in favor of his plans for us. And it's that paradox that actually winners will be losers, losers will be winners. The more we lose for the kingdom, the more we stand to gain. So I'm just going to ask the band to come up. We've got some words from the prayer ministry team, but actually before we share them, I felt like there were three kinds of people who would want prayer tonight. And as a band player, what I'm going to ask you to do is, if you feel like you're one of these people, that you just stand up, and we'll get the kind of the people around you to pray for you, if you're comfortable with it, because, you know, as I said, we're all one family, we're all brothers and sisters, and we should be able to pray with each other. So the first kind of type of person that I think might want prayer tonight is someone who actually the cost of following Jesus, the greatest cost in their eyes, is social humiliation or embarrassment in front of friends and family. And actually tonight I feel like God is saying that he wants to give you some thick skin. So if that's you, keep that in your mind. The second group of people are people, I think, who have been making their own plans, who have been wrapping up plans to kind of build their own towers or strategies to go to war. But actually, God's saying, don't try and do it in your own strength. Give it to me. So if that's you, keep that in your mind. And then the third group of people are kind of people who don't have family that go to church, like me. And maybe your family are really supportive like mine, or actually maybe they're not, maybe it's really, really difficult. But either way, there's always kind of that kind of little niggle of isolation of not having your family there to support you. Well, tonight I'd love it if your kind of brothers and sisters and your new family could pray with you. So if any of those things are you, could you just stand up now and we'll get the people around you to pray for you. So there's someone around you, just go and lay a hand. Wait to see what God has to say to them.